With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Joining us right now in studio, a former Yankee, a former Met, a five-time World Series champion. He's got a perfect game on the resume. You know all of this stuff, and he's got a new book out you might not know about called Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, that he did with Jack Curry. Of course, you can see both those guys on the Yes Network, and that's David Cohen. David, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be on with you guys.
You know, you're great, Jay. I got to tell you, this is like an encyclopedia, for God's sake. You know, Jack Curry, you know, he writes, and he continues to write. And he really, I've perused some of it, and a couple of the interesting things. The aneurysm situation for you was really like you captured pretty good where you were as an athlete, what it was like to be told that you had the aneurysm. And do you think that it actually went back to the ALDS game against Seattle? Do you think that was the reason why, when you threw, 147 pitches?
Yeah, it was 147, the last 30 or so under extreme duress, you know, a high leverage type of a game situation. So I can't really blame that particular game, but it was kind of a series of games in that year and a lot of high pitch counts that kind of added up to wear and tear that led to an aneurysm.
You know, it's amazing. You went through the Buck Showalter firing, the Joe Torre hiring. I mean, you saw like the whole transformation of the Yankees, and you were in the middle of your career. And, you know, in the middle of all of that, they don't even give you a physical. You get the aneurysm. How close did you think it was going to be that your career was over?
Yeah, there was really no basis for comparison, Boomer. I mean, there wasn't like, hey, this pitcher went through it and this was his timetable. I was really kind of the first one that had an actual arterial bypass surgery. I had heard about Whitey Ford having something similar back in the 60s, but they didn't know what it was. And he lost circulation in his left arm after an arm injury. But yeah, I really didn't know. He didn't know if the vein graft that they grafted into my artery, into my shoulder, was going to hold once I started throwing again. So that first game back, I mean, even the doctors were like, you're fine, we think.
That was a game in Oakland, right?
Yeah, it was a game in Oakland.
And I'm sure it was probably pretty cool that night. And yeah, you remember it vividly. I was reading about it. So you went seven innings, no runs, right?
No hitter through seven. And then Torre took me out because I was on a pitch count. So you can imagine what that conversation was like in the dugout. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's different nowadays.
But yeah, I mean, he did the right thing, though. Especially after what happened to you the year before.
He did. I mean, I it was my first start back from 4 months off having an arterial bypass surgery. So, yeah, absolutely. I had 85 pitches after seven. So he was already thinking one inning ahead. He said, look, I'm not worried about the eighth inning. I'm worried about the ninth inning. You know, you're going to take 20 pitches. You've got 110 pitches here. And then you still have to get three more outs in the ninth. And those are the high stress pitches. When you've got a no-hitter in the ninth inning or a perfect game, well, you're under the gun.
So you know that baseball fans in this city are passionate, they're crazy, and when the book comes out, I actually saw a legitimate amount of Twitter reaction from Mets fans who were upset that you weren't represented on the cover in a Mets uniform. Now, you of course work for the Yes Network now. You got a perfect game championships with the Yankees. I understand why you're in the Yankee uniform, but did you vacillate a little bit on what the cover was going to be?
No, we talked about it, absolutely. It was something that I thought long and hard about, but you're right. I work for the Yankees. The Yankees are helping me promote the book. I think for the most part, a lot of people remember the more current history with the Yankees, and the perfect game is covered in that book very well. So yeah, absolutely. Vacillate's the right word. I mean, we didn't know which way to go with it. Finally, Jack Curry and our editor from Grand Central Publishing decided that was probably the best picture. So, I acquiesced.
You could have gone with it. You could have got a split picture,
right?
You know,
yeah,
one of each.
Yeah.
Or you would have suit tossing a baseball up, or one of those things.
There's a lot of Met stuff in the book. Yeah. I mean, that became apparent early with Jack Curry. He did a great job with this book. We're going to have to be raw and honest here, Boomer. If we're going to cover the Mets years, and I came in 87, even though people think I was on the 86 Mets.
I know. Right. I'm still mad at you guys. And I mean, you guys should have had like four championships.
Yeah, sure. That 88 team I thought was, as good as the 86 team. And people talk to me all the time. They think I was on that 86 team. And
yeah.
You know, I laugh. I kind of go with it now. I'm like, yeah, I was there. I was on the 86 Mets. But
you know,
obviously
amazing,
I wasn't.
You tell the story about when you first came to the Mets, though, how you were intimidated when you walked into spring training. And then you go on to describe your teammates. Now, you didn't describe them like Ronnie Darling described, you know, yeah. Lenny Dykstra. You know, you described him as Ronnie Darling did the first time. Gritty. He was the guy that kind of like had the attitude. Wally Backman had the attitude. The chain smoking first baseman Keith Hernandez. Yes. That was a wild baseball team.
Incredibly wild. I in recent memory, I don't know that we've had anybody to compare to quite like that group. And you know, after the first couple of weeks, you know, they kind of embraced me, and for the first time in my career, I felt liberated because Kansas City was really a conservative organization, and I butted heads with the Royals in their minor league system about style. You can't throw sidearm sliders. You have to pitch this way. They tried to break me and change my mechanics the whole way through. And the first game I pitched with the Mets, Keith Hernandez says, "I love the way you pitch. You keep dropping down and throwing sidearm. We love your style." And it was liberating for me when I got to the Mets that I was embraced by Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter and all of those guys.
Boomer and Geo with David Cone. Full Count is his new book, and 20 years for the perfect 20th anniversary for the perfect game. And you're having a party on Wednesday, June 20th at Mandarin Oriental, New York. And for tickets there, you can go to 21 or call 212-252 Cone 20 years ago. I mean, it's incredible to think about that. I mean, does it feel like 20 years for you?
It's a blur. It really is. You know, it's also that year in 1999, Paul Simon sang in center field at Yankee Stadium on Joe DiMaggio Day.
Yeah.
And so, Paul's a big Yankee fan.
He's going to be at this party.
Yeah, I talked him into it. He's going to come and make a performance of his song, Mrs. Robinson, and it's going to be pretty interesting. That's actually June 19th at the Mandarin Oriental. So
Fat Joe as well. Yeah. Paul Simon, Bernie Williams, and Fat Joe.
Yes. Which is kind of interesting. You bougie bastards are all doing it at the Mandarin Oriental.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
Well, we actually need a favor from Paul Simon, too. Because so Boomer's daughter's getting married in June, and it's actually right after this.
Yeah,
so he'll be around. So he's in town. So Boomer chose a song, Father Daughter, right, by Paul Simon. So if we can get Paul Simon to go, you know, from your event over to the wedding and perform that live. So if you could just put in a good word.
Yeah, my guys around here are coining this the Royal Wedding of Long Island. I don't necessarily feel that way. But, you know, maybe we can impress my compadres here, who I am inviting to the wedding. If Paul could show up and sing that song, that would mean a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, you are Boomer. You're a legend
right.
Here.
Oh, yeah, why not? Yeah, I'm a legend, right? You know, so your perfect day, your perfect game. Was Yogi Berra day, and you recant how you were looking out of the bullpen as you were getting ready to do your warm-ups just to hear the Yogiisms and everything else and see Don Larson and all of that other stuff, not knowing that this was going to be your historic day. And I'm just trying to think, like you said, you didn't warm up as hard because it was a hot day, right?
Yes, it was a hot day that day. I knew my arm was going to get loose. I really wasn't even concentrating or thinking about anything. I was enjoying the festivities with Yogi. I mean, that's the kind of atmosphere Yankee Stadium has, you know, on those kind of days. You know, I talk in the book, you know, I pitched on the day Mickey Mantle died. I pitched on Joe DiMaggio Day. I pitched on Yogi Berra Day. And those are the days when you get that Yankee sense, you know, that it's bigger. You know, that's why there's no names on the back of your uniform. You're part of something bigger. And, you know, I understand that people ask me the difference between Yankee fans and Mets fans. Yeah, there's certainly a sense of entitlement with Yankee fans. I'll admit that, and rightly so.
Expectations, too, I would think.
Yes, expectations go right with them. But Yogi Berra Day is as good as it gets at Yankee Stadium, the way the fans reacted to him that day.
You know, you're the perfect guy that I asked this question to, and I know it's been many years, but I think it continues to this day. You know, we talk about how when there's adversity with the Yankees, someone else steps up, whether it's Gio or Scheller or Thyro or Estrada or whoever the hell else, right? And then with the Mets, when there's adversity, it's just one thing after another, and the GM's got to have a press conference, and a $30 million player's falling into a hold. You know, it's just like it's unbelievable. So as a player, when you walk into both those clubhouses and the expectations and the history of the organization, do you feel a real difference in those two places?
Well, you know, the experience level on me, you know, I was a veteran by the time I went into that Yankee clubhouse, so I was so prepared for it. As a youngster, I was a kid from Kansas City, Missouri. They had never been to New York. So when I was thrown into that Mets clubhouse, and then in 88, I talk about the playoff series with the Dodgers when I ghostwritten, you know, I did a ghostwritten column with Bob Clappish and how I completely just, fell on my face, completely choked, Boomer. I describe it in quite detail there about what it feels like, and some of the anxieties you feel as a player. And I know you probably have experienced this. Some of the best players that you've ever been around are sometimes the most insecure ones. And I was no different. And, I detail that 88 playoff game where I just completely choked before that game because of that newspaper column. And my legs were heavy when I walked out on the mound. And I just, I clearly was impacted by nerves. And I couldn't even get the ball to home plate on the first six or seven pitches. So as far as the clubhouses go, to answer your question, yeah, I mean, they're similar, really, because of the media attention. So that there's just as many media personnel that cover the Mets that cover the Yankees. It's the same dynamic. It's the same accountability that you have to have. And if you don't stand up in front of your locker and you're not accountable and you're not honest, you're going to get called out in this town. There's just no two ways about it. And you will get exposed. And I think we've seen that on both sides of town, but certainly with the Mets recently.
We're talking to David Cohn. He's got a new book out. Book is Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. Interesting, when I listen to you on Yes, you're all of a sudden like you've become this analytics guy.
Yeah.
Spin rates and all this other stuff. Now, if you would have known all this stuff when you were pitching, would you have utilized the knowledge that you've gained as a broadcaster?
Absolutely, I would have. It's the same technology they use in golf. If you've ever got fitted for golf clubs, a launch monitor, they call it, and the launch angle and the ball speed, it's the same technology that's in baseball now. And you can actually, I've always been obsessed with putting spin on a baseball, whether it's a slider, a curveball, turning over a splitter, understanding the nature of spin and how to do it. And now we can measure that. And I remember playing catch with Sid Fernandez with the Mets. He was a great left-handed pitcher. He didn't really throw that hard. He threw 89, 90 miles an hour, but his ball always had life. It jumped. We used to call it Jack. He's got a little jackrabbit in his fastball. And now we can quantify that. You can look at the spin rate, and there's a difference between velocity and spin rate, and that explains life and movement on the baseball. We now can quantify it, and that's something that's right in my sweet spot, obviously. That's what I did for a living, was put spin on a baseball.
Isn't that like if you watch Tanaka pitch, right? He puts a spin on the baseball, and when he is on, his ball starts like waist high, and then when it gets to the plate, it's down by the ankles.
Yeah,
and the
absolutely.
Guys are chasing it. The guys are, going after. I always thought that John Franco, at least when he was with the Reds, he was a master of that. It would look like he was throwing a strike. It would always end up out of the strike zone, and somebody would swing and miss.
Absolutely. Now we have definitive measurements on that, and you can go and you can tell when he has his good stuff, when he doesn't. Maybe you can tweak your grip and get that movement back again. You can pitch design, what they call pitch design now. You can design your pitches with the help of this technology and see if you're getting the right type of spin and the right type of movement. And you can make much quicker adjustments now with that information.
Are they talking to them during the game about that or no? Or is that just something they just kind of leave you guys alone?
You know who they're talking to is the manager during the game. So if the manager sees something, it looks like this pitcher's losing his stuff, he can get real-time information from the computer, from the analytics guys who are embedded with the team now on the bench, and hand him.
So there is a guy on the bench.
Absolutely.
On the bench. There's a guy in the hallway screaming down in the hallway.
Well,
hey, Skip! Skip, you got to get him out!
It's close enough. Whether he's right behind the dugout, he gets to the bench in a hurry, and there's a computer printout that shows you, yes, his release point is dropping, his spin rate is dropping, he's starting to lose his stuff.
Right, so the manager has this now newfound information that is really starting to take hold. Where did it start? You know where it started?
Well, I think the Houston Astros are probably on the forefront of a lot of this technological breakthrough type of information. The Dodgers are certainly there. Obviously the major markets are going to have more resources and more investment to pour into it, but everybody's playing catch-up. Every major league franchise now has this information. The Baltimore Orioles are probably the last ones. Buck Showalter was a bit of a holdout in terms of some
his
of
name's
that.
Been talked about with the Mets if they ever moved on from Mickey Callaway, so maybe that might hold him back. But do you think we've gotten to a point where maybe it's going a little bit too far and you forget about the personal side of the game and humans are playing it?
It's a valid point, absolutely. And it will come back around full circle. There still is a place in the game for the old school eye test, for those old school baseball people that understand the game, understand character, understand that human side that you're talking about. Yes, that is, they call that a market inefficiency. I think that's become the new market inefficiency, is the human side of it that you're referring to.
What is it like to work with like Michael Kay? I heard he's like a huge egomaniac. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, Michael is he's so generous on air that he makes himself a target, and O'Neill just lines him up on a nightly basis.
Such an easy target, especially for athletes.
It presents itself. There's opportunities that present itself, you know, quite often on the YES Network.
Full Count is the book. David Cohen and Jack Curry. And don't forget also the 20th anniversary of David Cohen's Perfect Game. There's a celebration Wednesday, June 19th at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, New York. And if you want additional information, 212-252-CONE. David, thanks for stopping by. Best of luck with everything.
How about this? How about staying one more segment with us?
Whatever.
I'd love to talk some Yankee baseball with you.
He's got 10 more questions about the aneurysm. He really didn't get to the bottom of it.
I like the aneurysm story. and he explains it unbelievable and how lonely it is for an athlete to go through something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He wouldn't understand that. All right. 906 on the fan. I work with a bunch of narcs, Dave. All right. That's non-athletic regular people. Okay, good.
We are lucky to have David Cohen join us for another segment in studio. He's got a new book out, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, that he wrote along with Jack Curry of the YES Network. And this Yankee season has been incredible to watch as they just bad luck, losing guys all over the place. And then, I mean, every single day, someone else is stepping up. Guys you never expected to be a factor. From your perspective, what has this early season been like watching the Yankees overcome all these injuries?
I'm blown away. I think everybody's been blown away. We expected the worst. I mean, if you're not a Yankee fan, or in fact, if you're the opposite, if you hate the Yankees, this has got to be really annoying right now. I mean, if you think about it, Gio Urshela was Gio who to Gio cult hero almost in a month's period of time, and Domingo Germán steps in and is every bit as good in term numbers-wise as Luis Severino was, the guy he replaced. I mean, the list goes on and on. Luke Voit is really for real. I mean, what we saw last year, can you believe it? Yeah, yes, he is for real. He's a great hitter. He fits right in the middle of that lineup. Brian Cashman has had a great run of finding undervalued players, building depth so that when the injuries did hit, that they had pieces in place. And even if they didn't, they could go out and pluck somebody, whether it's Kendrys Morales, who shows up his first day in Yankee uniform and hits one in the suite level at Yankee Stadium up in the upper deck. And that's just the way it's going. That's when I kind of, you know, just started pulling my hair out when Morales hit one up in the suite level the other night. And that's Brian Cashman's move. He's got the magic touch right now.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, adding Morales, you got another switch hitter in the lineup now. That's another lefty, because they've been lefty light if you really look at all this. Is there a biggest surprise to you of the Yankees in terms of a player?
I think Domingo Germán stepping up, and you know, he's on track to maybe make the All-Star team. And we saw the stuff from him last year, but he's taken a giant leap forward this year. And you know, I talk about analytics and forget the numbers. It just his presence on the mound, his confidence, you could just see it. The way he stands on the mound, his body language, he expects to win now, and that's a great thing. But, you know, I know I'm biased as a pitcher myself, but when I see a young pitcher like that take that next step, and you see that look in his eyes now, and that confidence seemingly growing overnight, that's fun to watch.
That was Severino in the first half last year.
Yes,
it kind of looks very similar in terms of the body language, and everything else. How about the disappointments? I guess Chad Green would be one of those right now, right? Because he's scuffling, and Jay Happ would be one of those.
Yeah, so far. Yeah, Jay Happ's got to keep the ball in the ballpark. I mean, the problem with Jay is that he's a veteran guy. He's very confident. He challenges hitters. But if he misses his spots and he's up and out over the plate with his four-seam fastball, if it doesn't have the life and the spin rate that we talked about, those are home run pitches. And he's currently, you know, I think at the top of the shelf or top heap in terms of home runs allowed per nine innings or any way you want to measure it. So that's a problem. When you pitch in the American League East, Camden Yards last night, Yankee Stadium, if you can't keep the ball in the ballpark, you're going to get exposed in the American League East.
Would there be a you know how Sonny Gray was here and he said they wanted me to throw sliders. They wanted me to throw sliders, and he didn't feel comfortable throwing sliders. Therefore, obviously, he and Larry Rothschild did not fit. Could there be a little of that going on here where maybe they're trying to get him to be a little bit more aggressive with a different type of pitch, and he's kind of resisting that and it's not working? Could that be a part of it?
You really got to go inside the ropes to find that out. Jay Happ's a veteran guy. He kind of, you know, his style is pretty basic. You know, he's always been a fastball pitcher. He pitches up in the zone. He's always had life on his fastball. So he's a guy that you can look at. And if the numbers start to diminish a bit, then his stuff is going to diminish. You can kind of you can kind of see it happening and sort of verify it with the numbers. I think it's fastball command with Jay Happ. He's never really been a big secondary pitch guy, meaning a really good slider, a really good changeup. He's always pitched off his fastball, and his other pitches sort of complement that. So if his fastball is getting hit or if he's lost a little bit off of that fastball, that's the problem, because that's what he pitches off of, is that fastball.
Boomer and Geo with David Cohn on the Fan CBS Sports Network. I don't know how much sports talk you're listening to, but a lot of calls during this Yankee resurgence has been, what are they going to do when all the guys come back? I mean, the answer is obvious. I mean, Aaron Judge, one of the best players in baseball. Didi's a clubhouse favorite. He's been great. Yankees goes right back to shortstop. The one guy I'm worried about, though, and I know he's going to play, obviously, is Giancarlo Stanton. But he is like the poster child for the home run or strikeout. I don't want this guy up in a big spot. He's not a Yankee. He still hasn't earned his pinstripes. The pressure that's on Giancarlo Stanton when he comes back after this team with these guys have played the way they have, I think is enormous. What do you think about that?
I agree, and we've seen him handle that pressure very well. If you remember, he struck out five times in one of the first games last year, and he got booed off the field, and he stood in front of his locker, and he almost made fun of himself. He was self-deprecating. He said, hey, that's what you do. You take the garbage out, you know, and referring to himself as garbage, you know, and those at-bats he had. So he can handle it. He's got a thick skin, so I don't worry about him from an emotional standpoint, but your points are valid. And not only that, is how much left field can he play?
Yeah.
When you have all of these bats that you need to get into the lineup, Kendrys Morales now in the mix, and what if he gets hot? And if Didi comes back and plays short, now Gio Urshela's on the bench. So, yeah, it does present some issues, and it is amazing that the Yankee fans have gone from, oh, my God, all these injuries, who are all these guys, to, oh, my God, what happens when these injuries come back? And what these new guys, you know, I want to see them.
This is going to be crazy. Yeah. And, you know, and the thing about it is, assuming they all stay healthy, that's what we're all assuming. But it seems like everybody's gone down kind of like to allow somebody else to stay on the field. You said Gio Urshela goes to the bench. Why wouldn't Torres go to second? Why wouldn't LeMahieu then become part of the first base platoon, potentially, and then leave Urshela on the field?
It's a great point. Absolutely could do that.
Estrada seems to me to be the guy that would be the odd man out.
Yeah, Tyro's kind of a super utility guy now, as is. But, yeah, you're right. That could happen. I think that also would push Luke Voit to the DH spot. And then that means Giancarlo's going to have to play more left field, and then Brett Gardner goes to the bench, theoretically speaking.
Yeah, then where's Clint Frazier go when Aaron Judge comes back?
Yeah.
I mean, these are all good problems to
have. Exactly.
So are we seeing a new and improved Gary Sanchez in your eyes?
Yes. You know, I think what we saw last year was a bit of an aberration. He had some health issues. I think he was playing through some shoulder issues. He got a little surgery to clean up his shoulder in the offseason. This guy's just a beast at the plate. I mean, I guarantee you, if I'm pitching against that Yankee lineup, if I'm picking one guy out of that lineup that I'm going to give him four and walk him, it's Gary Sanchez right now. I mean, he is healthy again. His defense has been great this year. He's blocking balls right and left. He leaned up, got in shape, a little bit better shape this year. His core strength in the offseason really paid off. He's got a rocket for an arm to throw to second base.
He had a triple the other night, for God's sake.
He had a triple, and he was measured at league average speed. I mean, there's not too many catchers that run league average speed. So
what happened to him? I mean, like, where did it all click again for him? There's no one, because last year, how many times were we getting negative phone calls?
Every day.
Every single day. Gary Sanchez this, Gary Sanchez that. No more. It's all gone now.
Yeah, it's all gone for now, right?
Yes, exactly.
To me, a lot of it stemmed from some of the pass balls, you know, not moving as well behind home plate. And that is the least important thing for a catcher. When I look at a catcher, I'm looking at framing, throwing ability. You know, there's about six other issues before I look at blocking balls in the dirt. And when you think about some of those pass balls, they were Aroldis Chapman throwing 104 over here when you're looking for it over there. And, you know, this Yankee pitching staff, Dellin Betances with that nasty breaking ball, they are a hard staff to catch. High velocity, high movement, the highest degree of difficulty, especially when you get crossed up, which happened a lot with Sanchez. He's a middle linebacker back there. He's never going to move like some of the most mobile catchers that we've seen blocking balls in the dirt, but that is the least important thing. And for some reason, that's the thing fans fixate on, because you see the ball go back to the backstop and he's running back there to go get
it. In a 195 average, you know, that's and a lack of home run power. So, but that's not what we're seeing this year. His average is better, his home run power is better, and his defense is better. And that seed he threw to second base the other night was just absolutely on target. And that was the Gary Sanchez we saw when he first came up.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people talk to the metrics, too, with Sanchez. And there's a metric called batting average on balls in play, which stabilizes around 300 in major league average. Sanchez hit 190 on balls in play last year. It was abnormally low. It was an aberration. If you wanted to point to a metric that you can kind of hang your hat on, that Sanchez did hit in some bad luck last year. And now we have some metrics that sort of, you know, tell you the luck factor nowadays.
So I was going
to
say, go ahead.
I know that you're focused on the Yankees and the book and all of that, but I really need to get your take on what's going on with this Mets team. So we were sold yesterday by the general manager that this is a team that's good, that's underachieving. Now, that's what his line was to us. So I don't necessarily believe that. Do you believe that it's a good baseball team that's underachieving? Do you think that this is a bad baseball team on their way to another bad season?
But I was excited about the offseason moves. I saw Robbie Cano play with the Yankees. I think he's a pure hitter. I thought, you know, I know there's age issues and the back end of his contract, you know, could be an issue. But I really thought, well, he wanted to come back to New York after being buried in Seattle. I thought he'd be great. He still can be. He's shown flashes where he can really get hot. I still think he can play. I love their pitching staff. I think Syndergaard is still trying to figure it out a little bit. Wheeler, from the way he finished last year, and of course DeGrom, I thought, wow, this is still a dangerous team because they can get hot and that pitching staff can get hot. And the next thing you know, that's how you build a win streak, where one starter after the other passes the baton and you get on a roll. I still think they're capable of that. But on the other end, you talk about high risk, high reward. If this thing goes the other way, if Cano falls on his face, if some of these pitchers don't step up and pitch the way they can, this thing can really go south in a hurry.
You know, you can't fall on your face unless you run. last night he did run and actually ran faster to second base than any time that he has in the past 3 years. So I think the message may be getting through to him. I just want to ask you one more question about the Yankees, and that's Aaron Boone and his maturity as a manager from where he was last year at this time to where he is this year, especially with all the moving parts around him.
You have to give him a lot of credit. There's no panic in Aaron Boone. You know, it's a thankless job. I mean, you knew people were going to get on him because he came out of the broadcast booth. He had no coaching experience, no managerial experience. So last year there was always going to be second guessing, and he won 100 games. I think the Red Sox won 108, and that was the problem for Aaron Boone last year. This year, all the injuries, no panic. You know, I would panic. If I was a manager of the Yankees, I would have been panicking in the post-game press conferences. I would have said, yeah, this is a problem. Aaron, you know, all these guys going down. He never did. And the buy-in is what you look at. And you know this, Boomer, being in clubhouses and in locker rooms. You know when a team's got your manager's back and vice versa. And they buy in. They love him. They like the way he must be doing something behind the scenes in terms of communication.
Do you like the way that he handles his pitching staff?
Yeah, I think it's a collaborative effort nowadays. I think all managers, that's the nature of the game now. There's a collaborative effort with Larry Rothschild, with the analytics department. It's almost as if it's scripted, like the NFL, like you script the first 30 plays of the game. It's almost like the bullpen and the management of the bullpen on a daily basis is almost scripted, and it's more of a collaborative effort in my mind, and that's just the way the game has gone nowadays.
Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, is the new book by David Cohen and Jack Curry. Thanks for being here. It was a pleasure talking to you. Best of luck with the book.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Good job, Dave. Always great to see you. All right.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.